Good evening. Okay. So we're advertised as the Raving Beauties. And we started in 1982. So here you have the dregs of the Raving Beauties, what's left. We're also advertising anecdotes, bad puppetry. There might have been something else, but I've forgotten. Okay, so here's an anecdote, just to start with. I talked to somebody who runs literary festivals, and we were trying to sell him the gig. And so his comment was, "Who in their right minds goes to poetry readings?" So I would thank you for not being in your right minds. Okay, I'm going to throw in a joke. That's extra. We haven't advertised it, but you're going to get one. It's not a joke, actually. It's a cartoon on similar lines. So the cartoon, there's a packed plane, and there's a man standing at the front, and he's got a papers in one hand and a gun in the other. So it's a little bit bad taste in the present climate, but never mind. He's saying, "Look, this won't take a minute. I just want to read you a few of my poems." So you're getting the idea? Okay. So you're warmed up now. I'm warmed up. And so this is Dee, this is Sue, and my name is Fanny. I was going to try, you know, getting a bit rock and roll and say, let's pretend we're at Glastonbury, and I shout, "Hello, Lebri," and you'd shout,
"Hello."
No.
Nearly. All right, well, I'm enjoying myself. So we're going to read you some poems. We are the agents of some wonderful poets, and we do hope that you will enjoy. Is that it?
That's it.
I forgot. Shut up and get on with it. Okay. Mae'n nghariad i'n fenos, mae'n nghariad i'n fai, mae'n nghariad i'n dlysach, na blodau y drain. My father's in my fingers, but my mother's in my palms. I lift them up and look at them with pleasure. I know my parents made me by my hands. They may have been repelled to separate lands, to separate hemispheres, may sleep with other lovers, but in me they touch where fingers link to palms. With nothing of their togetherness left, but friends who quarry for their image by a river, at least I know their marriage by my hands. I shape a chapel where a steeple stands, and when I turn it over, my father's by my fingers, and my mother's by my palms, demure before a priest reciting psalms. My body is their marriage register. I reenact their wedding with my hands. So take me with you. Take up the skin's demands for mirroring in bodies of the future. I'll bequeath my fingers if you bequeath your palms. We know our parents make us by our hands."
"Please cut my hair so that I look like me, but with shorter hair. And can you do this without me trying to describe what it is that I expect to see when I next dry my hair? For the polite gene in me knots grimly in curls to your scissors. And even if it's Scrimshaw on a grand scale, and even if I go home and wash my hair 10 times to get rid of the banded Galloway in the mirror, I will still leave you a generous tip. And what's more, come back in a week or so as if I am a goldfish.
You don't need to clap after everyone. You're exhausted.
When Gretty from Grealish Town soaked and clipped, you talked. You tell her things you kept from the priest. At first there were doubts about this whippersnapper who worked in the hat factory. What would she know about stubborn old nails? But the toenail gang knew her unflappable touch. She would tuck cotton wool soaked in antiseptic under an untamable buckle and deliver him. You'd feel nothing more than her coaxing gaze, calling for more story, more story.
She'd had her teeth out in her teens. Lots of girls did it. Dentists were expensive. You got fitted with a falset before marriage and kids. What did she want with teeth? She'd still got a jagged scar where the neighbour's dog had bitten her cheek. She didn't even make bridesmaid. She kept her lips shut to hide the hole in her mouth. She ate the kind of food that slipped past her gums, gallons of soup and ice cream. They talked her into it for her 60th. False teeth were different now. Pearly, better than real. She could have a perm too, and a new party dress. She agreed, wanting the dress. But the teeth never went into her mouth. She'd lay them on the grass, jaws slightly open, so they seemed to be smiling. Then she'd sit beside them, at a safe distance, in case they turned nasty, and tell them stories she would have told her children.
Witch!
Burn the soiled ones in the boiler, my mother told me, showing me how to hook the loops of gauze-covered wadding pads onto an elastic belt. Remembering how my grandmother had given her strips of rag she'd had to wash out every month for herself. The grandmother who had her chair by the boiler, who I loved, but was plotting to murder before she murdered my mother. Or my mother, shaking, sobbing, hurling plates and cups, screaming she wished she'd never been born. Screeching, devil, witch. Murdered her. I piled up the pads until the smell satisfied me. It was the smell of a corpse. How could you do such a thing? My mother asked, finding them at the bottom of the wardrobe, where a year before she'd found a cache of navy blue knickers stained with black jelly clots I thought were my wickedness oozing out of me.
God save me from women with choppy bombs who sashay into the office wearing too much fake tan and talk about gastric bands, crow's feet, cracked heels. They all eat sushi and talk about their clitoris every 7 seconds and swish their hair like Claudia Schiffer and tweet minor celebs and wonder what they would do if they ever got stretch marks. And they once made a suicide pact in the conference suite.
Oh, kill me if my breasts ever sag, or if I get so fat that men no longer find me attractive, not even my husband,
they say.
Darling, I'm wearing Eau de Parfum by Katie Price. Can you smell the long top notes of July?
They ask, before inviting each other to run their finger along the smoothness of their product-perfect skin. But these women fall silent whenever I enter the room. Then they eek amongst themselves like mice.
What does it feel like to be youngish and only have one breast?
They ask. I could try to explain it differs from woman to woman. I could say quite honestly, to me, it doesn't matter that having one breast makes me unique, actually. It makes me feel like an Amazon queen. Save me from these women. I know the world can't be full of women with cropped black hair who won't give themselves to the darkness no matter what. But all the same, God save me.
If my fat was too much for me, I would have told you. I would have lost a stone or two. I would have gone jogging, even when it was fogging. I would have weighed in, sitting the bathroom scale with my tail tucked in. I would have dieted, more care a diabetic. But as it is, I'm feeling fine. Feel no need to change my lines. When I move, I'm target light. Come up and see me sometime. Come up and see me sometime.
Come up and see me sometime.
My breasts are huge, exciting amnions of watermelons. Your hands can't cut. My thighs are twin seals, fat as slick pops. There's a purple cherry below the blues of my black sea belly. There's a mole that gets a ride each time I shift the heritage of my behind. Come up and see me sometime.
It's all about the bass. I'm allowed to stay the night with my friend when I get to be 15. We spend the afternoon trying on her 5 pairs of Levi's. That night, we eat avocado and sit around a wooden table all wearing Levi's. Me, my friend, her little sister, her big sister, her mum and her dad. No one says anything about the Levi's, just about how there isn't enough out of avocado to go around. I save my wages from working in the greengrocers each Saturday, hauling steaming beetroot out of a vat and sorting potatoes and hiding from the Saturday boy who makes me feel red as a beetroot. And then I buy a pair of Levi's. My mother finds them, where I've hidden them. In our house, no one wears jeans because they are worldly. I've been changing into them behind the neighbour's garage and going to my Saturday job, where the Saturday boy sometimes touches my bottom and says it's nice, and I wonder how it will feel when he kisses me, or what should I do? My mother has tears in her eyes and says she must tell my father. And when she does, he takes my jeans and pushes them into the Arga where he burnt the prime of Miss Jean Brodie the week before. At 18, I leave home. And later, when my mother can bear to speak to me again, I bring my boyfriend home. And she buys him a pair of Fara trousers to wear because she says people can see his cock and balls through his Levi's. Only she doesn't actually say cock and balls, but I know that's what she means. I'm at a family party, and I'm wearing my Levi's. My niece is getting married, and we're all here to meet the boy. He flirts with me, and I enjoy it, although I'm surprised because I'm 50 and he's half my age. I look at the outline of his cock and balls beneath his jeans through my sunglasses. We all drink, and he gets flirty. We all love him until he starts telling jokes. He tells us about a girl whose camel's foot is so fat it makes him queasy, and about how he'd like to give my niece a string of pearls. Later, I ask my husband, what is a camel's foot? He says, it's when a lady's cunt is big, you know, when you can see it, like when she's wearing a tight pair of jeans, if it sticks out. I feel a sort of sorrow inside me about my niece and about my cunt. as well. I like this man who, charmed by me, slips alongside and inside of me like the tongue of a dog, lapping at my life, throwing the ball of it into the air to catch me out again and again and laugh at my earnestness in odd places. He says I rise like 100 balloons let loose from the child's hand. Beautiful, bold, even when out of sight, like notes of music falling over themselves, like larks ascending. He says, when I sleep, I sigh, and he watches me wake and smiles at the fuzz of my hair and my mind in the morning. He is charmed. He is charmed. I begin to charm even myself. He sees me as lovely. My breasts defend my father even more than my opinions. It's the size that's insolent. Bursting out of t-shirts, spilling out of camises that hang demurely on any other girl. The most mundane actions inspire a filial mistrust that extends well beyond your garden variety middle-class moral suspicion. Going out for coffee with a friend, being on the phone, in our lounge, lying back to partless on the couch becomes an act of sexual rebellion. My sisters get hugs. I, at best, get awkward back pats. Fed up by a darzi at 10, groped by a driver at 11, and too many times to count since. Intrusive hands, years of poor posture couldn't deflect. I envy other women, their ability to wear their sexuality like a mask, to take off and on as they please, and not least, I envy them their delicates that actually look delicate. Mine, all hefty cotton and industrial strength underwire, look just like armour. Fortunately, though, the man I love loves warriors.
Talk in the bar lulls a half-time fill. As I knife-scrape the head from another pint, he hobbers, pocket-fothering his change. Steady for the ask, he addresses my full frontals, my baby buggy bumpers, my Brad Pitts, my boulders, my billabongs, my squishy cushions, my soft-focus bristles, my motherly bosoms, my matronly bulk, my Mickey and Minnie, my Monica Lewinsky's, my Isaac Newton's, my snow tires, my speed bumps, my Tweedle twins, my milk makers, my Mobitus, my num-yums, my peers adorers, my pointer sisters, my honkers, my hooters, my hubcaps, my hummers, my Eartha Kitts, my Eisenhowers, my God's milk bottles, my Picasso cubes, my chesticles, my chattels, my coconuts, my dairy pillows, my devil's dumplings, my objectified orbs, my uber boobs, my one-part Lara, my two-part globe, my skyward pips, my lift and separate, my airbags, my feeders, my mammy glands, my bob and ray, my big bouncing buddhas, my sweater stretchers, my sweet potatoes, my rosaceous rotors, my rusty trivets, my melliferous melons, my mamas, my totty, my torch, my pert palookas, my jahubis, my kicking kawangas, my agravic gobstoppers, my immodest maids, my scooby sacks, my screeching slobes, my cup
cupcakes, my soda bread, my Blumenbabs, my brilliant bangers, my brush bazookas, my windscreen wipers, my Winnie Bagos, my Wapapaloolas, Wapapaloos, my Yahoos, my Yahoos, my Yipping Yin Yangs, my Paps, my Pips, my Pomme de Terres, my pushed up, plunged down, paraded balcony, my slow reveal, my instant appeal, my decolletage, my fool's mirror. I watch him pay up, steady up, and leave.
Ooh, tit or not. Anyway, here we go. He told her, keep it neat and tidy. She thinks, same as the kitchen, same as the kitchen sink. She asked, how he'd like her done. A Brazilian, Hollywood. He said, just keep it neat and tidy. She combines Brazilian and basic bikini. It's a shame then that she leaves wet sponges damply lining the kitchen sink. He wishes she would wring them out or not stack. Use pots to stink like drains, but leave it neat and tidy nightly. It is hard to negotiate hands on flesh, and hard not to complain when cleanliness comes to grief in the kitchen sink. Day in and out, the chores remain. Monthly hair waxes and wanes. He congratulates her. You've kept it tidy, all but the kitchen sink.
After the guys had got their awards, we understood each other's need to sag back in our seats and breathe out. The matching of ties, tuxedos, cufflinks, shoes, belts, haircuts and mustachios had all been worth it. For there they were, up on the stage, holding their crystal balls. A woman beside me leaned in to whisper, I just want to say how natural you look.
There was nothing simple about it even then.
An 11-year-old's hunger for the wet perfection of the Alhambra.
The musky torsos of football stars.
Ancient Egypt and Jacques Cousteau's lurching empires of the sea.
Bazaars in Mughal India.
The sacred plunge into a Cadbury's five-star bar.
Kanchenjunga.
Kisses bluer than the Adriatic.
Honey stain of sunlight on temple walls.
A moon-lathered Parthenon.
Draft of northern air in Scottish castles.
The child god craving to pop a universe into one's mouth.
It's back again, the lust.
That is the deepest I have known.
Celebrated by paperback romances in station bookstalls.
By poets in the dungeons of Toledo.
By bards crooning foreverness. And gut thump on FM radio in Bombay traffic jams.
An undoing.
And a making.
Raw.
Raw.
A monsoonal ferocity of need.
Just walk up and down half and get their legs free. Yes, that's it.
When we snogged, I was Mum's trendy yoga friend Trish. You were Kev, Trish's imagined fellow. It was after Dynasty when we kissed and did it by shaking our clothed bodies together like Torval and Dean in the Bolero. Darling Kisses was our name for this. You had to whisper, oh, darling, first. We weren't close. We were on top of each other. The massages began at Gran's house, with Mum-style tickling of the neck. Next came animals traced down spines, and my hand just short of your forest. It was all teeth and Disney wolves. I think of the forest in Cardross, with the ruined high-rise seminary that in my childhood was a closed order. Today its ruthlessness is crowned by birds. Its altar is an altar to needles and fallen angels and weather. I'm gonna wash that man right out of my hair.
man right out of my hair. Because of my crown, I came to doubt the word and the power of Tricolosians to trim it. They sheared long curls of mortality with their razors and knives. A flock of goats on the mountains of Gilead. Her hair is like unto a mantle of purpurry. If a woman should go bareheaded, she shall be shorn. And if this step be distasteful to her, she shall be shaved as well. Should a woman be dragged by her hair to a fold as a lamb to the slaughter? By shepherds? Were they bald? Standing before your altar in my worst nightmares, I see a woman, shorn, being drowned as a witch, each single hair plucked out. Another girl reaches out to her. She is tarred and feathered in dark stains. She turns into Esther, offers shit and mud instead of rare perfumes. Jesus, what would you say to women who wear veils today? Is there a place for us in your sanctum? We long to hear that story again and again, the one about a sinner. You let her dry your feet with the unfettered beauty of her hair, and nobody stopped her. Nobody!
Churching was a religious ceremony performed by the Catholic Church on women following their giving birth. A sort of cleansing. My aunties were churched. Gravelly-voiced women with low-cut necks and wide-brimmed hats and hands that kneaded dough and slapped it in its place. I'll not be churched again, she said, me Auntie Nora sitting there in her frock of brazen red. 6 children did she bear. Sure, what's a little wear and tear for a woman like yourself? 2 others did she lose. 1 was handicapped, still is. Wombs and breast and leaking milk, quick, pass the surplus made of silk. That's what she swore she heard them say, the clerics, when they began to pray. I'll not be churched again, she said, and bow and scrape and bend my head. Sure, what in heaven's name would they know of mornings retching o'er the sink, of the giving up of the booze, the fags, the drink, of the giving up and the giving in and the hormones raging through me like an ocean full of sin. I'll not be churched again, she said, and bow and scrape and bend my head. Sure, what in heaven's name could they know of the life growing in my womb, how it moves and turns, swimming in a dark galaxy of its own. And now I nightly roam the barren landscapes of the moon, and I'm throwing up again at noon. I'll not be churched again, she said, and bow and scrape and bend my head. Sure, what on earth could they know of bringing forth a child, of the moaning, swelling, growing wild, of the burning, opening wide and free, of my waters breaking like the sea. I'll not be churched again, she said, the Auntie Nora sitting there in her frock of brazen red. I'd rather go to an early tomb than let them curse my blessed womb.
In my study of female circumcision amongst the Sudanese tribes, it has been interesting to note that the procedure has no noticeable effect on subsequent marriage and childbearing, and that few side effects trouble the patient. It's important to know how the women themselves champion the practice, or so I gather when I'm able to talk to them, which is not often, owing to the various tribes' particular codes of conduct, which I am loath to break. However, I have asked them to describe the procedure, the knife, the needles, the sutures, the aftercare, not because I take pleasure in hearing about such things, needless to say, but because there isn't the pain you'd expect. They just numb, as if the spirits have departed them to race across the plains, trampling the dust of the plains and disappearing over the edge of the world. Julia wears a pink dress and earrings, has green eyes and a ponytail. She has herpes, hepatitis, thrush, staphylococcus, cervical erosion, HIV. She lives with her mum and dad in a studio flat in an old district of Kiev. They have three cats, Hanka, Ephedra, Morpheus, opium, ephedrine, morphine. She learns English before Euro 2012. My name is Julia, $50, 50 minutes. All right, name's Rhiannon, and I live in the Rock, and I love drinking cider, and I love sucking cock. I want to be in college, but I got a little kid, and a crèche in a college ain't that fucking big. My mother won't help me, because I nicked her telly, and my old man, he's a prick, he punched her in the belly. Nuts in school I was, chucking chairs and selling fags, expelled at 15 I was, for robbing the teacher's bags. It was for the best, though. I was pregnant with Levy. Missed all my exams I did. To my wife I said goodbye. My fella's shagging round. He's been gone a while. His baby's about to drop soon. We'll go on Jeremy Kyle. So I hang around the shops to see who he's shagging. All the boys come on to me, think I'm out slagging. Oh, my boobs are fucking killing. And my belly's rock hard. Bastard doesn't give a shit. Now he's with his new tart. Another kid. Another gyro. Is that all we are worth? Isn't there more to this here life than giving fucking birth? Another drink. Another fag. Another spliff or pill. We are fucking humans, yeah? Not pigs in fucking swill.
Your daughter is ugly. She knows loss intimately, carries whole cities in her belly. As a child, relatives wouldn't hold her. She was splintered wood and seawater. They said she reminded them of the war. On her 15th birthday, you taught her how to tie her hair like rope and smoke it over burning frankincense. You made her gargle rose water, and while she coughed, said, "Macanto, girls like you shouldn't smell of lonely or empty." You are a mother. Why did you not warn her? Hold her like a rotting boat and tell her that men will not love her if she is covered in continents, if her teeth are small colonies, if her stomach is an island, if her thighs are borders. What man wants to lay down and watch the world burn in his bedroom? Your daughter's face is a small riot. Her hands, a civil war. A refugee camp behind each ear. A body littered with ugly things. God, doesn't she wear the world well?
Things get away from one. I've let myself go, I know. Children, I've had three, and don't even know them. I strain to remember a time when my body felt lighter. Years. My face is swollen with regrets. I put powder on, that it flakes off. I love him through habit, but the proof has evaporated. He gets upset. I try to do all the essentials in one trip. Foolish, yes, but I was weepy all morning. Quiche. A blond boy swung me up in his arms and promised the earth. You see, this came back to me as I stood on the scales. I wept. Shallots. In the window, creamy ladies held a pose which left me feeling clogged and old. The waist. I forgot my purse. Fumbled, shop girl gaped at me, compassionless. Claret. I blushed. Cheese. Kleenex. It did happen. I lay in my slip on wet grass, laughing. Years. I had to rush out, blind in a hot flush, and bumped into an anxious, dowdy matron who touched the cold mirror and stared at me and said, "I'm sorry. Sorry. Well, girl, goodbye. After 38 years, 38 years, and you never arrived, splendid in your red dress, without trouble for me, somewhere, somehow. Now it's done, and I feel just like the grandmothers who, after the hussy has gone, sit holding her photograph and sighing. Wasn't she? Beautiful. Wasn't she beautiful?
Mama, she told me don't worry about your style. I want a red dress. I want it flimsy and cheap. I want it too tight. I want to wear it until someone tears it off me. I want it sleeveless and backless, this dress, so no one has to guess what's underneath. I want to walk down the street past Thrifty's and the hardware store with all those keys glittering in the window, past Mr. and Mrs. Wong selling day-old donuts, past the Guara brothers, slinging pigs from the truck and onto the dolly, hoisting their slick snouts over their shoulders. I want to walk like I'm the only, only woman on earth, and I can have my pick. I want that red dress bad. I want it to confirm your worst fears about me, to show you how little I care about you, or anything except what I want. And when I find it, I'll pull that garment from its hanger like I'm choosing a body to carry me into this world. Through the birth cries and love cries too. I'll wear it like bones, like skin. It'll be the goddamn dress they bury me in.
I got married. I got married to myself. I said yes. A yes that took years to arrive. Years of unspeakable suffering. Of crying with the rain. Of shutting myself in my room because I, the great love of my existence, did not call myself. Did not write to myself. Did not visit myself. And at times, when I get the courage to call myself, to say, "Hello, am I well?" I wouldn't come to the phone. I even put myself on a list of pains in the neck. I didn't want to talk with. because they drove me nuts. Because they wouldn't let me alone. Because they backed me into corners because I couldn't stand them. At the end, I didn't even pretend. When I asked if I was there, I let myself know, tactfully, that I was fed up with myself. And one day, I stopped calling myself and stopped calling myself. And so much time went by that I miss me. So I said, how long has it been since I called? Ages. Must be ages. And I called myself and I answered. I couldn't believe it. Because though it's hard to believe, I hadn't healed. I'd only been bleeding. Then I said, hello, is that me? It's me, I said, and added, it's been a long time since we've heard I from myself or myself from me. Would I like to come over? Yes, I said. And we met again, in peace. And I felt good with myself. And myself as well felt good with me. And so, day after day, I married, and I married. And I am together. And not even death can me part.
For all the world, like a trio of wild-haired women breasting out of that cloud, the prows of three ships, arms stretched behind them, coasting the blue. And why less real than this sunshine, backlighting my garden, the halo around the hedge, the green plastic chair that holds my dreamlike limbs, as unconnected to me as those three on their way to vengeance against. Please, summertime wine of next door's boys, desperate to cry out, and their hammering father. One of them soon will raise the first fist. The not fair him to the ignored mother I can hear saying to no one listening, no one at all but me, saying, look, look at those women up there riding the sky.
I would if I could choose. Age and die outwards as a tulip does. Not as this iris, drawing in coiling its complex, strange, taut inflorescence, willing itself a bud again. Though all achieved is no more than a clenched sadness. The tears of gum not flowing. I would choose the tulip's reckless way of going. Whose petals answer light, altering by fractions, from closed to wide, from one through many perfections, to wrecked, flamboyant, strayed beyond recall. Like pieces of fire, they piecemeal fall.
I've never seen a soul detached from its gender. But I'd like to. I'd like to see my own that way, free of its female tethers. Maybe it would be like riding a horse. The rider's the human one, but everyone looks at the horse.
Time for a Q&A, but we'll take 10 questions with yes-no answers.
if you can't.
I could think of any. No, I'm kidding. I mean, if you do, if there is just one or two very quick responses or questions, we...
Who are the poets?
Yeah. Sorry, the poets. The poets are in our book, Hallelujah for 50-Foot Women. If you want me to go through the list of all of the poems that we've just read.
We could be here for a while.
But just to give you an idea, because it's a mixture of poets who, of course, have been published and are widely known, like Vicky Fever, but many of them are first-time published in our collection. So it's about 50-50 split. Okay, so we're very proud to have done that kind of compilation, put new people with very experienced people. Nicola Daly, Sally Sinclair, Deborah Alma, Hira A, Barbara Smith, Arundhati Subramaniam, Tashana Doshi, Anna Woodford, Mena Elvin, Siobhan McMahon, Eva Saltzman, Wolsan Shire, Caroline Duffy, Lucille Clifton, Kim Adonisio, Susan Thanon, Heidi Williamson, E.J. Scoville, Chase Twitchell. I'm glad we did that. Thank you. Any others?
Do you want? Row.
Hmm?
This lady on fifth row.
I was going to ask you. Your Hallelujah, your title, Hallelujah for the 50-Foot Woman, is that something from film noir, or have you come by that?
It is from one of our poems, which we haven't read tonight.
So it's from a film noir. I was thinking it was from one of those film noirs in the 50s or 60s.
It is like that, isn't it? Attack of the 50-Foot Women, yes, it is. Yeah. Absolutely like that, yeah, it is.
Do you guys write?
Hmm?
Do you write?
No, I write. I do write, but
Dee does.
I write. I sing. She acts. She acts. I write. I sing.
We do a bit of everything, I think. You know, painting.
Okay, one more question.
One more question. Yeah.
Deborah,
I just wondered if you change your performance every time you give a performance, because you seem to have a lot of poems to choose from, or do you have a set routine?
Oh. Well, we haven't done it enough times on one level to have a set routine. So we've changed tonight.
We've changed some and put in some others. And
we have to have a structure of sorts. But sometimes we'll think, well, maybe nice to add a poem that we haven't done before. Or
it's marvellous.
Okay, yes. We'll take one more question. The lady at the back there, you raised your hand earlier.
Yes. What
triggered the desire to get back on stage as Raining Beauties?
What triggered what?
What triggered the desire to get back on stage?
Senile dementia.
It was so enjoyable the first time we did it. It was so enjoyable. And there's so much still going on for women in women's lives. So much remains extremely difficult and contradictory that the possibility of being a voice again is a great privilege.
Yes,
and you think, well, you know, if we might just be able to do that again. So there's something that needs saying. Perhaps we can say it.
And we have reached an age now where we truly have a freedom that maybe I think we had some of it when we were younger. But you do reach a point where you think, well, if not now, when? You know, if I'm not going to stand up and say these words now, I will never say them. So it's lovely. There's a sense of no apologies.